Welcome to What's My Thesis. I'm Javier Proenza, and today I'm talking to the art dominatrix Elizabeth Folk, and we're here at the studio. We know each other through OPAF. I interrupted one of your dominatrix sessions.
You did. You're very naughty.
Yeah.
There was important work happening in the tent at OPAF, and yes, the window was slightly cracked, and you were trying to peer inside.
Well, I mean, I didn't crack the window. The window was like
it was
transparent, you know. So I was like, "Hey, what you guys up to?" Yes. But okay. So then, what is the work that you're doing? Like in terms of, because I apparently I'm not that well versed in dominatrix stuff.
Okay, well, I mean, there are a lot of stereotypes, right, in popular culture. We have the very unfortunate 50 Shades of Grey that spread a lot of stereotypes. But what I'm working in is mostly domination and submission psychologically, and the whole piece came about. Actually, I'm a teacher. I'm a professor at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. I teach sculpture and performance art. And one of my friends was telling me, lamenting that none of his students had handed in their final project. And I was thinking, how the hell is that possible?
Yeah.
My students, their projects are, they're like lighting their projects. It's in, you know, the presentation room. They're being lit. They're being documented. And like not in the kink sense at all, but I joked, like I am an art dominatrix. Like my students get that shit done.
Yeah.
And that's actually a couple years ago when I had the idea for this performance. And, you know, today I was like, how do I navigate this? I'm going to go do this podcast. I want to dress like mistress and make an appearance as mistress on a podcast for the first time. But, you know, I need to speak candidly also as Elizabeth Folk. So I'm moving kind of back and forth between between those. But
well, what's the difference?
That's a great question.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that question.
What's the difference between the dominatrix and or the mistress and Elizabeth?
And Elizabeth? Well, what I'm doing is alternate persona, which is part of my thesis.
Okay.
I did think, okay, what is my thesis? And I want to talk about alternate persona. So I'm sure you're well aware of artists who have worked in alternate persona.
Yeah, like Cindy Sherman,
yes.
Nikki
S. Lee.
S. Lee. Thank you. I'm so glad you knew, because I brought her up recently and I didn't know her last name. Who else would follow
that? Lorraine O'Grady,
okay.
Who did a piece, Mademoiselle Bourgeois Noir.
Okay.
And it was a dominatrix piece. She came into different galleries, black artist dressed in a dress completely made out of white gloves, was whipping herself with a white whip, and was singing songs and protest poems about the art world and how black artists are marginalized in the art world. And it was completely unsanctioned, unauthorized work. And
what do you mean by that?
She would just go up into people's openings and perform. Yeah. So there's that kind of unsanctioned thing. Like Beyonce and Sasha Fierce. Utilizing like kind of a different avenue.
Is Sasha Fierce like an all-out persona, or just an alias
Kind of an alias, like an album produced. But I think that you can hear it.
Yeah, people
who aren't looking can sort of visually hear my outfit, which is latex and
is
vinyl.
Is latex a prerequisite for dominatrixing?
No, it's just
it fits the aesthetic.
It fits the aesthetic, right?
Yeah, for your purposes.
For my purposes, and also like we're always code switching and performing, and we're always like wearing different types of things to communicate. We're constantly like code switching, and so like for example, the way I'm behaving right now is a lot different than I might behave at, you know, if I'm meeting a new partner's parents for the first time, or if I'm teaching versus if I'm teaching when my chair walks into the room. So, you know, we're all sort of pretending in a sense, and contextually within different social contracts. And I think that alternate persona work is some of that just kind of maybe accelerated often by costumes. And it really lets artists sort of play in this area where maybe they wouldn't as themselves.
Well, and then also it's, I mean, like once you don the outfit, it's hard. It's easy to make the psychological switch too, right? Like you're wearing the armor of the dominatrix that gives you that is empowering, right? Like, I mean, I wonder if it would have the same effect if you just did it in jeans, you know, and a t-shirt.
No, I actually used to do it in jeans and a t-shirt, okay. but with a wig.
Okay.
So, I don't know. It's kind of like a kid in a superhero cape. Yeah. Calling on the, sort of archetypes of
my brother hated me when I was a kid because I used to walk around in cowboy boots and a Batman cape, and he would be embarrassed because he's 6 years older than me.
That's really cute. Were you empowered by this? Like, did you have an alternate persona that
I don't remember? I just remember the stories of how we used to drive him crazy, but I'm sure, you know, like that's kind of what being a kid is mostly about. It's being able to don something and be like, I'm cowboy Batman.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. Right. A lot of it is pretend.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I'm doing is, moving into this space where, it is exhausting to hold the persona for too long, but the art dominatrix is powerful. She has a lot of answers that Elizabeth Folk doesn't. She can hold space for people, in ways that maybe Elizabeth can't or doesn't want to. It's been a really powerful performance that I take really seriously now. And I think it really helps people.
So you did something in Vegas. Am I correct in that?
I did.
As the dominatrix, you went to Vegas, and what was that? Was that an art space, or was that in like an art kind of context, or was it more in a...
That was in a the Las Vegas Gentlemen's Club, which is a strip club.
Okay.
And three of my friends, one of my friends, Brent Holmes, who's a brilliant artist and curator in Las Vegas, his friend Beverly Chills, who's a non-binary Black artist in Vegas, Brent's a Black artist in Vegas, and Amber, whose name I cannot remember now, they put on this exhibition at this Black strip club, and they invited artists to come and explore. It's actually a movement. It's called Exhibition, like with an X. And it's a movement to sort of fuse and explore the intersections between the adult entertainment industry and the art world. And Brent works in the art world. He's had, you know, solo shows nationally. He's a really well-recognized artist. Beverly Chills is more of a party planner. Amber's also an artist. And so they curated people who work in white cube spaces, as well as people who work in the kink industry, adult entertainment industry, lots of dancers. And then there were also grad students from UNLV who were involved in the show. So their goal is to really mesh those spaces and to break down stereotypes about the adult entertainment industry and sex work. And it's interesting. There was a lot of stigma around that show. It was kind of a big deal in town. Whenever I go to
Las Vegas,
this is, well, in the art with the capital A scene, which is actually kind of small, I think, there. When I go to a town and have sessions, I usually send out an email from the art dominatrix inviting people to experience a session, explaining what a session is. And I sent an email to basically everybody at UNLV in the art department, the museum, the grad students. I did get some emails from the grad students, but crickets, except for I usually keep this confidential. So one person, one faculty did come and have a session with me. But I learned later that grad students were being encouraged by some faculty not to participate in an art exhibition that wasn't reputable in a and that was in a sexually charged environment. I thought that was like really indicative of the thing that the exhibition is fighting against, you know, and is trying to challenge.
Yeah.
The same group also has figure drawing classes on Sundays at that strip club.
So the people that were boycotting or the same people that threw the...
The people who throw the exhibition event, who are trying to destigmatize the industry.
And is that set up as like a stage performance kind of setup? Like what is the, is it a convention center kind of thing?
A strip club.
It's just, this, it's but, a strip but I'm club. Saying like, is it booths? Like do they set it up kind of like an art fair kind of thing where you have like, you know, like how OPAF, you had your own little cordoned off place where you, is it like that? Or is it just out in the open?
Well, for my sessions, I had a dungeon.
Okay.
The basement of the strip club was also, it became at 10 PM, it became a VIP room.
Okay.
With a VIP party. And so I had the dungeon until 10 PM. And I did sessions down there, private sessions, one-on-one sessions. Yeah.
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 Yeah. That's interesting. So then what is like, okay, like, can we get to the meat of what one of these sessions are? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
What would that be like? Like, let's say, you know, for role play purposes, since you're an outfit, I'm coming in. And then, like, I'm definitely not submitting myself to being dominated on the podcast, but as an example, you know.
So people will fill out an intake form.
Okay.
And they'll basically identify anything that they want to. They're called creative unblockings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's primarily what I do right now, the meat and potatoes of it. And if somebody's blocked with something, they feel like it's hindering them from their highest excitement in their making their work, or from reaching their goals, or from breaking free of something.
But they, it's always in the context of their art practice.
Not necessarily. Okay. I have non-artists come to me. So I call it a creative unblocking, but you know, I think all human beings are creative, and that it expresses throughout yourself. So they would come to me, and people pick, you were asking, like, do they get abused, or, you know, do they get hit? And people come and specify on the intake form, like, what kind of what kind of session would work for them.
Okay.
So what they want to leave, how they want to feel when they leave. And like, what kind of vibe will work for them? So I do strict, moderately strict, clinical, nurturing, humiliation. So people can kind of pick on a continuum if, you know, they want a 5 for strictness. And that's what the session that they would respond to. Or if they want me to be quite clinical. I'm not a sadist.
Okay, so you're not getting anything out of it.
No, some dominatrixes are.
Yeah.
And it's like, dominatrixes are as different as they, like, as any group of people comes. Like, some people are extremely sadistic, and their clientele really gets off on that. And, you know, this is mostly psychological work.
Yeah, so people aren't getting turned on or off through these sessions. Or maybe they are.
Maybe they are.
But it's not openly, like, played out like that.
Like, the whole, like, is this sex work? Is this not sex work? I like to leave that quite ambiguous.
Mm.
I think that people could be getting turned on.
Yeah. But the stereotype would be, like, you crushing someone, you know, like that
cock and ball torture or something. Yeah, that's not happening.
No, I figured, but the domination in terms of psychological may actually get someone excited.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that could be part of it. So, so you're coming to me with a blockage. Somebody's coming to me with a blockage or some event that they want to move past. A lot of people have art wounds from teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really hard to listen to, because sometimes I can sort of hear in there maybe a misinterpretation of what the teacher said. But as a teacher myself, I'm like, oh, fuck, I have to choose my words so carefully. This person's been carrying this for 20 years. So we do some art therapy, some drawing to really sharpen, like, what exactly it is that happened, and like, how that's preventing the person, the client, from sort of moving into a space that, or occupying a space that that they can't reach because of this kind of trauma. And then we co-create a ritual to let go and transcend. So I'm talking, and it sounds like I'm using like psychological words, and I'm also using like words from kink and things like that. So what we have is a scene that is like an interaction between a dominatrix and her charge. Mm. So it's called a scene. There are safe words. So
like you pick, if you're being too mean to me about my art.
Right. So I have a orange and a red. So orange is slow down and red is stop.
Okay.
And they're all, I love getting people's intake forms and seeing their safe words. Some people are extremely creative. Some people are like, okay, orange and red, mm-hmm. or slow down and stop.
Yeah.
So we co-create this ritual. There's a table of props, and the props include art objects. They include just random stuff like mirrors and bells and candles and food. And together we pick the props. And if people pick, there are also handcuffs and whips and ropes and things like that on the table. If people pick those things, then I will work in like some more kink into the session. If people steer away from those things, then I know their comfort level is wanting to be firmly guided through the ritual, or clinically guided through the ritual, whatever they indicated on the intake form.
What comes to my mind, first of all, yes. because I've been doing this show for like 5 years now,
right.
is like, how often does this not go well? Like, we're, you know, like, cause you're putting yourself in a pretty vulnerable spot, you know, like all I do is make people put on headphones and talk into a microphone and they freak the fuck out.
How often does that not go well?
Often enough that it's stressful.
Really? Yeah.
So does that become an issue? And then
I've done at least 40 sessions by now.
Yeah.
And I've only had one not go well.
Okay.
Sometimes it doesn't reach the goal of doing an actual creative unblocking ritual. Like people just don't do it. They think it's like this very sort of camp performance art experience with a red bow. Like I'm going to go talk to mistress and, you know, I'm going to like basically experience her performance and I'm not going to invest anything into the experience. And, like that's really boring for me. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of disappointing because a really meaningful connection could happen and does happen very often. But I wouldn't call that bad, right? It's it's very low stakes. But I have had one person, my first ever time doing this project, who had a panic attack.
Oh, wow.
And I learned a lot.
Yeah, I bet.
Right. Yeah.
Is there like a liability waiver that you get people?
There is.
Okay,
there
cool. is. I need to start doing that too.
I know.
I mean, you're dealing with like people's like psychology, right?
Right.
So that can be a little, I mean, I stumble into it sometimes, right? But a lot of times, and a lot, what happens with me more than anything is that people can't remember what they said. And then they remember one thing and they think they said that for like an hour and they get stressed out. And then later on, they start sending me panic emails.
And they're like, cut this, cut that, cut that.
They're not even like that. They're like, you did this to me. They act like I'm acting in bad faith.
So
does that happen?
No.
Okay.
Because it's confidential and like this is going on YouTube and into the world.
No, I'm not asking you for specifics about anybody. In general.
So basically, to preface this, I should have said, this project is like part dominatrix. Mm-hmm. It's part improv, like theater comedy improv, part life coach, part art therapist and part seasoned educator.
Okay.
So it is absolutely novelty and people are warned of this many times before they participate.
Okay.
Like I was telling you, the sort of advent of the piece is like me being able to get students to make make work, right? Yeah. And turn it in on time. And that's kind of how it started. Like, okay, I'm gonna help people and hold the space for them to make this work, right? Or to get done what they need to get done. And then I had my first session, and that psychological thing that you experience all the time, yeah, like doing this show, probably started to happen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what you're just hitting on. Oh, fuck. Should I be doing this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Should I be doing this at all? Like, yeah. I'm not qualified. I need to go to school to get be a psychiatrist. You
my
know?
Reaction wasn't that. Just to clarify, my reaction was, how do you protect yourself from doing something, you know, right. like for yourself, you know, because there is liability there. And obviously you're not presenting yourself as a professional.
Right.
But anytime you were dealing with people's psychology, like you don't mm-hmm. know what you might tap, you know? So it's interesting. I mean, it's very brave to do.
Right.
You know, as somebody who gets people to be vulnerable on YouTube,
right.
I can only imagine, even if it's confidential, like, you know, you share somebody with somebody, something with somebody, and like you regret sharing it, or you start thinking about what that person thinks of you. Like, it just seems like it could be pretty heavy. Right. I mean, but that's my question.
No, those are all in my mind, but kind of the beauty of the alternate persona thing is that like when I'm in session, I'm this badass dom. Like, I don't give a fuck what people think of me.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting. Like, I was wondering if I'd be able to sort of move into that space during this interview. And like, I'm not 100% there. So it's really interesting because this is the first time I'm kind of experiencing talking about mistress as Elizabeth. Yeah. So I'm like kind of in this interstitial space, which is, and I'm warming up to you, yeah, which is something like dominatrix right away, yeah. right away, right?
Set boundaries, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But I think it is like this formulaic parameters that
keep set you out, safe.
Which are we're going in on one thing. Mm. We've got 20 minutes to zero in on that, you know, this amount of time to make art about it, and then the ritual part is super fun. Mm-hmm. Like, say you're ready to like thank this bad thing and move on. There are many, many, many steps. So perhaps you're ringing a bell and we've written a song together. Perhaps we've written a contract that you're promising me, if you want to get X, Y, or Z project done by April, we're signing a contract. Maybe you're going to check in with me, or maybe you've got this friend that we called during the session that is going to support you in that. So there's work to be done. And also as a teacher, I'm dealing with people whose brains aren't as a college professor, I'm dealing with people whose brains aren't fully developed. Like they're developing. This is when people are coming down with, like their brains are, you know, revealing mental illness and all sorts of different things, and you know, getting dumped for the first time or whatever. And I think I'm really good, just from years and years of practice at consoling people, or consoling people in a reasonable amount of time as well.
Before the class ends.
No, I'd stay late a lot. But do you know what I mean? Like, I feel comfortable facilitating the work without having like a mental health emergency happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's only happened once.
Like, you've got good boundaries. Oh, do you want to talk about that? No, you don't have to. I mean, if you want to, you brought it up. But we don't have to pick into it.
Let me think about it.
I'm not your art dominatrix in this situation.
Right. We might, like, maybe we can come back to that.
Okay.
I think there are other more interesting things, but we could possibly come back to that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, can you tell me about your practice before the dominatrix stuff? Like, as Elizabeth Folk, like, what is that? What was the practice? Was it always performance-based? Was it always, or was there more object making?
Right. It's always had some performance element, and lots of objects. Like, I have a full sculptural practice outside of art dominatrix work.
And it's not kink based or
it's getting there.
But has there always been this interest in sort of the domination and the sex work element of it?
Yes. I'd say I've made a lot of kinky artwork, probably the funniest to tell you, or the kinkiest to tell you about right now, is the Third Street Promenade. When I was in grad school, I did service industry my whole life. Have you ever worked in a restaurant? So it takes one to know one. Like it's a completely different mentality. And I would observe this kind of domination and submission. Like it's kind of back and forth. If you're a server, like you're in control, but the table, the guests are also like quite in control and can boss you around. And so I put on a ball gag and I went to the Third Street Promenade dressed like a server, like any wearing black pants, a white shirt, a bow tie, and had an empty water pitcher. And I just watered them. I went to
like gave water
the little on the periphery of all of the little gated seating areas of the restaurants. I did not touch anything, but I did reach over and
just put water.
Pour. But there was no water in the pitcher, so nothing came out. And when that moment, like disbelief suspended, looking up at me, they saw that I had a ball gag in my mouth.
And what was the reaction to
really
that?
Really funny. Some people thought it was hilarious. Some people were outraged.
Really?
Yeah.
Like anybody yell at you kind of thing? Or
Somebody said, "What the fuck are you doing?" I didn't go up to families and things. It was an experiment, and like playing into that sort of power dynamics that exist and class dynamics.
And in terms of sculptures, like what kind of...
I do kinetic work. I cast metal. Do a lot of found object work. I know you do some found object work as well.
Yeah. I mean, I did a while ago.
Okay.
You looked at my old ass website. That's my fault for not updating my website. I mean, it does bring up stuff to me because I'm not a performance-based artist.
Right.
But obviously, this is a performance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I watch what I say. I cut things out that I think might get me in trouble. But ultimately, I also try to keep a balance of, like, I also don't want to pretend I'm not, you know, I believe things that I don't believe, you know?
Right.
So it's an interesting thing to have that. But I don't know. To me, the idea of the dominatrix feels vulnerable, even though it is dominant. You know, like your persona.
Interesting.
There's a vulnerability because you're putting
yourself... You've clearly never had a session with a dominatrix. Probably change your mind.
I'm very sensitive.
Okay.
I don't think that being...
Maybe you'd like need a nurturing type
of situation. Yeah, I need a mommy
situation.
More than a dominatrix.
So that's really, really valid. The nurturing part, and part of one of my inspirations is Bob Flanagan and Sherry Rose. Bob Flanagan was a performance artist and a visual artist with cystic fibrosis.
Okay.
And he was also into kink too, and he was in a lot of pain his whole life. And the only time that he felt liberated and empowered was when he was experiencing consensual pain with a dominatrix, which he met Sherry Rose. They partnered up. She's a dominatrix. She became his mistress. He became her slave, and they partnered up and lived a really happy life together.
Yeah.
And so there's this notion of like the dominatrix as somebody who can hold space for people to experience transformation or give them permission to experience things that they want to experience, but they aren't giving themselves permission to experience. So that's why I'm employing this sort of trope. Is like as a space holder.
I think the vulnerability comes from the intimacy, right? Like you're having a very, like someone is divulging some really, you know, even though maybe you're not giving of yourself, you're also taking on a role. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I mean, I know it's kind of a contradictory to say that while you're dominating, it seems vulnerable to me. And maybe I'm completely like you said, maybe it's because I've never done it, but that it feels like, it feels like volatile, right? Like volatile. like it could be volatile in terms of, but it seems like you're very good at managing
like
that.
Volatile, like the charge. Like my charge could become volatile towards me.
Like it's all done on an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And if that agreement, if that balance is not respected, you know, like you're putting yourself out there.
Right.
Right. Like you're right. Like you could not do it and not risk anything.
Right.
You know, so how?
That's so boring.
I know, but I'm just saying like that's where the vulnerability comes right. to me from. You know, I don't think that you're necessarily sharing your feelings with them quite the same way, but you are sharing something about yourself in that you like having that dominant role, right? Like that, mm-hmm. that is your it's revealing
right.
of a part of yourself that, right. you know, that like is interesting to me, you know? I also wonder, like, do you self-dom yourself? Like, does the mistress ever come after Elizabeth Folk?
Absolutely.
Okay. Cause that's my experience with dominatrix. Okay. I'm my own dominatrix.
Okay. And do you hold space for yourself?
Not enough.
Do you push yourself to you know, become what you want to be?
Yeah, but but I'm not always nice to myself.
Okay.
I'm always like, you're not making enough money.
Okay, that's not a dominatrix. That's self-doubt and self-flagellation.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But no, I see your question in there, and mm-hmm. I appreciate that because that I think that's really intuitive. Absolutely. For example, sometimes I'll borrow, as Elizabeth Folk, I'll borrow like mistress's clothes.
Okay.
Like I have clothes that are only for the art dominatrix, but once in a while, I'm like, I really want to wear that shirt or something out. And I will think, like, mistress does not like me to borrow her clothes because I treat her clothes better than my own. I know sound like this sounds super weird, but I think it's pretty evident that I'm a little bit eccentric. So, but that's the type of thing. Or like if I am nervous to come do a podcast, like mistress is going to go do that. And like mistress will encourage me to, like, I know mistress wants to do that. So it's kind of like, what are her goals? And it's easier to do them if, you know, I think that she can do it rather than I can, which isn't to say that I'm a pussy in my daily life at all. Like I'm
pussies are great.
Quite the opposite. I mean, I use that, I guess the word pussy, I mean a wimp, I know pussies are amazing. Love them. But you're right. I should not use that word pejoratively.
That was not me correcting or canceling. No, I apologize.
I appreciate okay. I appreciate that.
But
sentiment.
That was not the intention.
That was an outburst. You just had to say pussies are great.
I just love pussies.
Okay.
Now it got weird.
No, I love pussies too.
But no. I get what you're saying. And I also use it in that terminology, just not necessarily on the podcast so that I don't get in trouble, but
right, maybe we probably shouldn't
continue.
Okay,
let's just change the subject.
So when describing like the things that I use mistress to like inspire confidence, let's say I don't want it to read that like I don't have that for myself, but it is a great way to try something new that I normally wouldn't, like the artist Theaster Gates, who's conceptual and works in social practice and urban planning, wanted to try ceramics. So did a whole body of work that he said, this is an alternate persona project, he said was one of his mentors. I think he called them Soji Yamaguchi or something. And made this entire show, presented it as this like master ceramicist's work. And then after the show revealed that it was all his work.
Mm-hmm.
So he had, you know, utilized this alternate persona to do ceramics, which he thought, you know, perhaps wouldn't come across as, you know, art with a capital A enough, you know, or like he needed permission to do it.
What era was this?
Was in like 2007.
Oh wow,
so
that's still crazy. That I was assuming it was like in the 80s, just because of how like segmented people used to be, like
art and craft and
and all of that. So it's crazy that it's so recent.
Right. I think that was like his hang up too. And it's also like about identity politics and minority men in craft. And there's I'm not doing the piece justice, but I just thought, you know, it was interesting that he used that project because he needed to give himself permission to do ceramics.
How much inspiration do you draw from Chris Gaines, Garth Brooks's?
Zero. Sorry.
No, I know. I figured. No, I was. It just popped into my
head.
How
much do you?
Oh man, it inspired the podcast. It would be. No, I'm kidding. Everything I do. No, I mean it's just so funny, like. Because you were talking about this artist that successfully did it. And then immediately, as you were talking about it, I just pictured him with his long hair, Chris Gaines.
Oh, God.
And I was like, it's not a given that it's going to work.
Well, yeah.
Not everybody's Ziggy Stardust.
No, not everybody. Ugh, that's a good quote.
Yeah.
Not everyone's Ziggy Stardust. But we all...
Want to be.
I think we all have Ziggy Stardust inside of us.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting. Can you like school me a little bit more on the different subgenres of domination? Because I didn't even know that there was. Are you that well versed? Because you mentioned that there's the stereotype of it, and I'll just throw out the stereotype because it's like, you know, like it's pretty clear. Stereotype is powerful men who are surrounded by yes men, need someone to punish them and make them and humiliate them so they can feel something.
Right.
Like that, and I'm sure that is a valid niche, but I mean, I can't imagine that there's that many rich, wealthy people I can't imagine exclusively that thing, you know?
Right. So BDSM can stand for a few different things.
Okay.
Bondage,
mm-hmm.
Domination. And some people say, or some people say discipline for the D, S either submission or sadism. And then the M masochism.
Mm-hmm.
And so not everybody does all or even more than one.
Have you seen Itchy the Killer?
No.
Oh my God.
Do I need, am I like culturally
no,
in a cave or what?
No, it's okay. It's Takeshi Miike who does like ultra violent movies. He did one called Audition. That's very famous. But in that movie, everybody is kind of a dom or a sub and they're always looking for their master. And these are like murderers. It's one of the most violent movies you're ever going to see. It's like, it might be too much.
Okay.
so be warned if you're going to go check out Ichi the Killer. But it is interesting because there is this like love and devotion for like, it's people looking for somebody that can be their dom, you know, and like the reverence for it. So that is, I just remembered that while you were describing that, but, cause
interesting.
Yeah. Like there's like moments where people are like, I found my master, you know?
Right. Like, interesting. It, like, so there's
moments
like,
of, like
a
relief.
Master and a slave and everybody's looking for their,
essentially, like, yeah.
Other part.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone describe this movie like this, but that is basically what you're
imagining right now. Interesting.
That's what that movie is about.
It's like literally about they call it a master and a
yes,
weird.
Yes. And it's people that are hugely violent that are sadists and all of that, but they're also anyway, that's aside.
Interesting.
But
so the stereotypes we're talking about the stereotypes. I do have besides artists and alternate persona and all the things. Of course, I have doms that I look up to and whose work I follow. I read a lot, do a lot of research, and there's one in particular, Mistress Damiana Chi. Mm-hmm. She's in Los Angeles. She's a PhD in psychology. And she has a podcast called Lightworkers Who Play in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
And she's part of this conscious kink community, which is coming from an empowered place of radical consent.
Mm-hmm.
And is like all of the things.
What's radical consent?
Radical consent is what it sounds like. Like really, really making sure that people are doing things that they consent to. on many, many, many levels.
I don't know who's getting beat up next door, and I know, apologize.
It does sound
it's like it's crazy. There's like bang, 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 bang. I apologize. We can't do anything about
it. No, that's okay. Can people hear that or the mics?
I think
mics
they
are,
might because I'm hearing.
Oh, interesting. So it's just to clarify for the listeners, it's not happening
yeah,
in
there's
the studio.
No, there's no one getting beat.
There's no nobody. We don't have any. We have there are no GIMPs.
Yeah. What? How does GIMP fit into the whole thing?
I stepped into it and I shouldn't have asked. No, I did go there. I don't fucking know. I don't know. But so Mistress Damianici and her conscious kink and her light workers who play in the dark, she talks about dominatrixes as healers and as people who really, really help empower people to go places where they want to go and experience things that they want to experience. And, you know, as a group of really powerful femmes who are able to hold space in a world that is volatile and make a safe space for their clients. So that's kind of like the lineage of Dom that I really identify with.
But you're not getting like super high powered people as the stereotype goes. You're getting just like my question is more of like,
no,
you don't have to be like a top, you know, like that stereotype doesn't apply to the majority of people that go see a dominatrix.
I mean, I feel like that's like maybe
it makes good entertainment, but I don't know.
It does make good entertainment. Like if it was it feels like the McDonald's of dominate, like the just kind of a stereotypical thing when,
well, have you seen Secretary?
Oh yes.
Okay. So that I think is kind of a break of that stereotype, right? Because she is not a high powered person. And
So most of the people that I see and I mean, it could be like, I'm working in the art context. It is still very much art world.
People,
absolutely. You know, I've done this performance at OPAF, at Rocky Mountain College of Art and Design, at the Momentary in Arkansas, where I met Tom Walton as Mistress, who is the heir to Walmart, and kicked him out of my dungeon, which was their conference room, which is one of my proudest moments of my life.
Was he excited about that, or was that
not at all?
No, he was.
No, he was like, "What are you doing in here? Is this your studio? I was dressed like this," and he didn't tell me who he was. And I was waiting for a client, and I said, "This is I'm the art dominatrix. This is Mistress's dungeon, and I'm waiting for a client. I'm preparing for a client." Looking out the window, is this your studio again? What is this? And finally, I said, you know, my client's about to show up, so I'm going to ask you to step out. It's nice to meet you. Are you with the Momentary? And he said, I'm in marketing. And which was really weird. And then I got this feeling like this person isn't who they say they are. Like maybe they don't even work at the Momentary, and maybe I'm in danger.
What's the Momentary?
Is the contemporary art satellite of Crystal Bridges, which is Alice Walton's gigantic, so one of the heirs to Walmart, gigantic art collection.
And where's that?
It is in Bentonville, Arkansas, which is a trip. Have you heard about Bentonville?
No, but I'm from Miami, and we have a lot of collections that are open to the public like that. So it's just interesting to hear about other ones.
This is this town, Bentonville, which this is a total aside, but it's worth it. the Waltons are building their own little city. It's the headquarters of Walmart. They're inviting Michelin star chefs to come open restaurants. Tom Walton has built like, I think it's like 10 square miles of world-class mountain bike track because he likes to mountain bike. Like inviting young families to move there. And I did sessions at the Momentary, and almost every single session involved breaking free from some sort of like negativity or some sort of like depression surrounding working for Walmart. or like one of their constituencies in town. But the Tom Walton story, I basically kicked him out, and the curator brought my next client in and pulled me aside before your next client. Tell me how your conversation went with Tom Walton. And I was just like, what the fuck? He did not tell me that. And I'm glad. I'm really glad.
So wait, did was there any backlash? Were any fallout from it?
I'm sure he was like, why did you all hire a dominatrix? But it was an inverse performance art festival. Shout out to Emma Saperstein and Cynthia Post Hunt. It's a wonderful festival that happens each year at the Momentary. Well worth it if people are performance artists to apply and go. Most fun experience. And Walmart will put you up in a
nice place
and feed you well. And
there's some interesting stuff. There's the IKEA residency that I want to invite. Ooh. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I have. I have.
So I forget her name, but I just found the Instagram account of the founder. So I want to invite her. But it's interesting. Nice. It's these corporate collab things are interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I don't feel good or bad of them either way. But it's just an interesting, it's an interesting crossover because I feel like a lot of that stuff happens at the like money level, the higher echelon. So then to see that integration between the people that aren't making that much money and the big corporate spaces is interesting.
It is really interesting.
But especially like nowadays, it's like, it's so hard to have any like really revolutionary art, with the way that patronage goes and whatnot.
Right.
So it's an interesting thing to see that, symbiotic kind of relationship where Molly did people that I respect have done the residency and they seem to have a really fun time. It seems like you're let out on the IKEA showroom floor.
That sounds so fun.
Anyway, I won't make you talk about someone else's project.
No. When did Molly? Molly. Hi, Molly.
I think she posted some stuff recently.
Okay.
But yeah, it's an interesting, like the art world, the more I get into learning about it, the more interesting it is to sort of kind of debunk some of the myths that I've had in my brain about it,
Art world?
Yeah, the art world in general, the capital A art world. It's interesting to hear your stories about them. It's crazy how puritanical it still is.
It is so puritanical. And
it's waspy.
Part of this project, absolutely. And it's all the things.
Like if we were in a Catholic place, there would be a lot more breasts and stuff and acceptable, like the body wouldn't be so weird. Like the
abject and the body and, it's definitely, a system. This project is challenging the white cube and gatekeepers who are predominantly white, predominantly men, completely able-bodied.
Dude, I just looked up the, it blew my mind and someone still hasn't been able to explain to me. The Whitney Biennial show this year is called Even Better Than the Real Thing, which is a U2 song. And it's curated by women. So these women picked this like white dude, like aged out, like of relevance kind of guy as the name of the... It's
interesting.
I don't know.
I have been so busy with school and service work for school that I have not looked at the Whitney Biennial at all. But is it like demographically?
No. Like, it's like so I said. Just the title. Like what blows my mind.
Annoys you.
It doesn't annoy me. It baffles me.
Like why that?
Why
now?
Why that? Why like a band that was popular at latest in the 1990s,
it's 2024. We're like... gonna have that title. Yeah, that is really weird.
And it's ladies and they're young and they're of color, so I don't know, maybe it's a complete coincidence, but literally when you Google even better than the real thing, what comes up is Bono's face on that YouTube video of that song, which the song is fine.
U2 was my first concert.
Oh, really? Mine was Billy Joel, but
really?
Yeah, yeah. But,
oh,
but
gosh, we're aging ourselves. That's, yeah.
But I did the Zoo TV tour, which was the Achtung Baby tour.
Yeah,
for you two. That was that was really cool. And then they had Flava Flav, and they had Public Enemy opening for them.
Yeah. Oh wow, that's a long time. That was good. I'm wondering, like, I want the title to make sense. Like, maybe they're reclaiming it.
I have no idea. I don't think we're going to resolve it. This is just one of those things that baffles me.
I'm going to Google it after we finish this conversation.
The best explanation someone's had for me is that the art world still has a very male gaze-y kind of thing. And maybe they're playing into the collector base. Anyway, we should change the subject because we're not going to resolve this. And it's just so random.
It is kind of random, but it's interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, going back to the broader point that brought me there was just the art world is so interesting. And it's interesting the kind of projects that people can come up with. There's always something interesting, new, that's exciting. But it really is hard in this day and age to do anything that's like sticking it to the man in art world, which I think that like going into art school, you kind of feel like you as an artist, you have that power.
Right.
And then like something happens along the way and you realize, oh, there's no room for that in the art market anymore.
I think that there are some acts of protest that stick it to the man. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, what is sticking it to the man
is what?
Is watching like first gen and minority students make it in the art world in a sense. Right.
But the gatekeepers are looking for that now, which is kind of crazy. After 2020,
do you think that the gatekeepers are changing at all? Like with institutions who are like completely denying the traditional art institution, do you think art institutions have changed since 2020?
I don't know, but I think that the art market, what it's seeking has. And I know firsthand from like people that have, it was since 2020, I just had Taita Whitney on the show. She's South Pacific Asian, and I don't know if that's the right terminology, but she is talking about how since 2021, that's when her blow up is. And now she's like a full-time artist. Same thing with Elmer Guevara, who is from El Salvador, and like just all of a sudden figurative work of the kind that he's making, which wasn't the case, is now becoming popular. So there's a lot of did you go to the Hammer show?
Yes, made in LA.
He went a couple years ago, it was all abstraction. And then this year it was like so much figurative work. And I'm not saying that as a good or a bad thing. It just is an observation of what is kind of popular. But yeah, I think that like people in general are trying to be more conscious in their purchasing, but that doesn't change that the people that have the money to purchase are going to be white people.
Absolutely. And the whole art school thing, this is a constant debate. I'm at a polytechnic university, which...
What is polytechnic?
Polytechnic is like learn by doing. Let's get down and get a job after. I mean, it's code for let's get down and get a job right after college. We have tons of career fairs. A lot of the students have jobs lined up as seniors. So it's definitely
art world jobs, like
more
assisting
based. I'm talking about generally for the whole. It's a large public,
not just the art
CSU.
School.
No, and we teach professionalism there. And when I got my MFA, there was only one person who was teaching like actually how to navigate your way through the art world, like contracts and how to put your CV out there, how to give an artist talk, like how to sort of be a part of this world where there are gatekeepers, like rich white male, women and female gatekeepers to this sort of all these social codes that you kind of like need to understand, or ways to protect yourself if you even want to get involved in that kind of thing. And I think stick it to the man by teaching students professionalism and teaching students like how to navigate in that world, mentorship. I think like this notion of like radical community and mentorship is kind of a way to stick it to the man instead of like pulling some big like smoke and mirrors performance piece that is like outrageous.
That's going to revolutionize the way people think.
Right, yeah. Right. Like what you're saying, I think that like mentorship and cooperation is actually kind of the thing. Yeah. Where that happens and where like we can really challenge the traditional art world. Are you skeptical?
No. Going off of the whole even better than the real thing, it got me thinking about who are the rich people, right?
Right.
And then I started looking at how many wealthy like black people there are just in general. And most of them are either in entertainment or something else. Like it really, and there's like maybe 10 billionaires, at least according to Google when I looked it up, which is interesting because, you know, like a lot of these spaces, what they want is that old money, you know? So like you might get a Jay-Z who gets to buy pieces from a collection because he has cultural capital. But, you know, like, I don't know if like, you know what I'm saying? So like it is an interesting thing, like the idea of trying to change the art world, but the consumers at the highest levels are still going to be, you know, the people that donate to like the museums, the Met and all of that. Like it really is interesting when you start breaking down the money and you start realizing like, oh no, this is like the money is still coming from a very,
the
very
capital.
Select, the capital.
But
that
I think
funds
a lot of
it.
People are moving from like a traditional gallery sales to like, you know, I met you at Other Places Art Fair, which is a artist run project, and nobody was selling anything. My sessions were free.
And I get that, but I'm just saying like the that's not institutional, you know, like, I mean, it can become it in the long run and all that. Cause I know that they're a 501c now and all of that, but it's interesting, like in terms of the art market, the consumer base is still going to be very, very white, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Which is like, at to what degree can you affect that? Can you affect change with that? You can do stuff like we're doing, you know,
right,
doing like smaller scale, like artist run initiatives, which are great. But ultimately, like, you know, I think that communities, like artist run communities are not living up to the same standard of rigor that, you know, some of these other spaces are. That's not a knock on, you know, like Skip Snow I had recently on, and he was talking about the difference between the art industry, the art community, and art, you know, as three separate entities. And I think that those projects tend to fall under the art community. And if it's a community, it's not going to be as competitive.
Right.
Like it's about inclusion. It's about collaboration. And then at that point, the rigor of the dialogue, I think, maybe doesn't kind of, you know, like you, if you go to a show at David Zwirner, you're going to see a difference in the intention behind a show at maybe like one of the smaller artist run spaces. And that's not a knock on either one, but they work. Like I would say the difference between artist run spaces and the art industry is that everybody, like, they're basically mirror images of each other, except one deals exclusively in clout and the other one deals with money. But anything that we can promote for you?
Yes, I have sessions coming up. They're booked tomorrow, but in next week, I think the 23rd at Idlewild, I have a couple of sessions opening. I don't think this will be up before that. I think that's all for now, but check out the Art Dominatrix on Instagram for any upcoming sessions that are opening up.
Cool. And then you're at Art Dominatrix on Instagram, and then Elizabeth Folk.
And Elizabeth Francis Folk.
Francis Folk. Yeah, are there periods in between?
Nope.
Just one.
Full run-on
sentence?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, cool. And then we'll be back next week with another guest and another topic that may or may not be art related.